Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
The unpleasant here. It's hurricane summer. Things like this are supposed to happen. You know, we get we get 10 inches of rain in a day, and then we go weeks without any rain. Well, welcome to the weeks without rain. A lot of that rain is just, I just want to remind you folks, that rain was very brief. If you got a lot of rain, it was very brief. And even those who got the most rain probably will begin suffering from lack of rain in about 10 days at most. So you got to watch it. It's that time of year when these things happen. You know, I'm not so sure that this is normal or not normal. I don't know how to characterize it, but we got a lot of crazy stuff going on, you know. And I'm thinking about it, and I had the pleasure of sitting down with my dad to sort of pick his memory. You know, my dad, he doesn't deserve to have a son as old and contrary as I am. And I reckon that he has a hard time believing that, too, that he has one as old as and contrary as I am. But I asked him, I said, Dad, you know, tell me what you remember. What do you remember? What do you remember as a boy? And one of the first things we always come back to is what it's like behind that plow. There's a big field, you know, where he grew up, there was a big field. They lived in a little village. It was where the Indians lived 300 or 400 years ago, in a little Indian village that was taken over by the Judges and the Lowrys and the Finches and the Smiths. And right below the Indian Mound, and they walked, all the families walked, they all did it in common. They walked down to the big field on the river, right there on the Chickasaw, and they plowed those fields. And he remembers, you know, what it's like, 12 and 13 years old, to be behind a mule, plowing, and you know, what is it like? And he said, you know, he said, them rows were awful long. He remembers how long those rows are. And you just start out and you're looking to the other end and you know you got to plow it straight. Because if you don't plow it straight, Granddaddy Lowry is going to snatch something out of you. He's just going to snatch so hard. And if you don't plow it straight, you're going to have to plow it again. And he just remembers, man, it sure was a long way behind that mean old mule and that plow that's jumping out of the ground every time there's a hard spot, all the way from one end of that field to another, one more time, again and again and again and again. And I'm thinking, what in the world is he thinking about? What is a 12-year-old boy thinking about when he's out there plowing that field from one end of the Chickasaw bottoms to the other? One end of the Chickasaw bottoms to the other. You know, I don't plow anymore. It's interesting to me to listen to him, because I don't plow anymore. In part because I recognize that the reason why they plowed those fields on the Chickasaw is very different than the reason than what I'm doing now. They were still mining, you know. They still had those Chickasaw bottoms, those river bottoms, that were still relatively rich. There was still some stuff to mine, still some minerals to mine out of that soil. There was still enough organic matter that was being laid down by the river every year that you could still plow it. But I don't plow anymore. Here's one of the reasons. I was talking to my nephews too, and he said, you know, I'm trying to do a garden, and he said, you know, my my father-in-law and his family, they've been doing this. They've been doing this field the same way. It's this big old field. They've been doing it the same way for a century. And I tried to do it, and he said, I'm just eating up. He said, the cockleburrs. He said, what do you call them? He wasn't sure what to call them. He said, the cockleburrs. We came to the term. The cockleburrs are so bad. He said, what do I do about them? He said, they just eat me alive. And I said, well, you know, that's why they spent all summer in those fields, hoeing those fields to get rid of the cockleburrs, plowing them again and again and again and again to get rid of the weeds coming up. I said, you know, I don't do that anymore. Because it doesn't make sense. Every time you plow, you get more weeds, and you just got to do it again. And I'm not going to spend all summer hoeing my field. So I make sure that when I start a field, I do it right. I mulch, because if the weeds don't see the sunlight, they aren't going to germinate. And that means I don't have to take that mule down the field one more time, another time, that long, long row. So I do it different. I do it different. But it's interesting to listen to how Dad did it. And I think, what is he thinking about when he plows that long, long line on the Chickasaw hay bottoms behind that mule where the plow jumps every time he hits a hard place in the soil? And right behind, and I said, you know, what do you think about it? He said, did you ever in the middle of a field pick up a watermelon and just crack it open and eat it? So I know what he's thinking about. He's taking them watermelons. He's plowing that mule, and there's the watermelons growing over there just up from where he's plowing. And he takes that watermelon, and he takes it down to the creek, down to the spring. There's a little spring coming out of the side of the bluff, and it's a cold spring, and he drops that watermelon in the spring, cools it off, and about the time he hits the row too many times, he hits the end of the row too many times, they take that watermelon and they crack it open and they eat it. And he said, you know, we didn't even think about the seeds. Of course we didn't. That's in the Chickasaw hay bottoms, where the cow oaks grew really tall next to the river, and where every spring the lilies, the Adamasco lilies, these beautiful white lilies in April, every spring, would just bloom just unbelievably all through the bottoms, everywhere you could see. It was a different world. It was a different world that he lived in. It was a different world he knew. It was a different world that he plowed. You know, the thing I get from that is we don't live in that world anymore, do we? We don't know what it's like living where the watermelons, where we cool the watermelons in the spring on the edge of the bluff. We don't know what it's like where the cow oaks grow so tall and where the Adamasco lilies grew underneath them, right by the old Indian fields that the Indians had never plowed. They used a dibble. They knew better. For years and years and years, we've forgotten that world. It was nice to revisit it with my dad. It was nice to think about it. And I keep trying to imagine, could he have imagined, 12 years old, plowing that field, what we've come to now, where the only watermelon we get is a seedless watermelon out of the grocery store. Yeah, it's a different world, isn't it? It's a different world. Well, we're here to rediscover the world. It's a good thing to do. Give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. It's an interesting place. We ought to learn a little bit more about it. Maybe we ought to listen to our old man every now and then talk about what it was like when he was growing up. It ain't religion, what it was like when he was growing up. It's just the way the world was. Ain't the same. But it's good to know. It's good to know sometimes. And it's good to try to imagine what he was thinking on those long, long rows between one end of the field and another, behind that mule where the plow jumped every time you hit a hard place in the soil. That's what I'm thinking about this morning. I don't know what you're thinking about, but feel free to give us a call, 251-343-0106. We're going to talk about your yard, talk about your garden. Got some pictures already. We'll be back.
Along about 1825, I left Tennessee very much alive. And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-riding that Tennessee stud. I had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw, and one of her brothers was a bad outlaw. I sent her a letter by my Uncle Foot, and I rode away on the Tennessee stud. The Tennessee stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green. He had the nerve and he had the blood, and there never was a horse like the Tennessee stud.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. You know, talking to my dad, listening to him talk about what it was like behind that mule plowing a big field, it makes me wonder whether people knew why they plowed. We do lots of things in the garden without really knowing why we do it and what it does. And plowing's one of those interesting things. We never really think, well, why did folks plow? What did it do? What does plowing do? It's an interesting story because for a long time, people didn't plow. Most, even big agricultural countries, even big civilizations that pioneered agriculture, they didn't plow, not like we plow. They had a different way of planting. And in fact, farmers now are coming back to the old way. The way before plowing, the way before we did plowing, and they call it no-till agriculture. It's interesting to do. It's interesting to think about all that. Interesting to think about why you had to plow and how you got on that cycle of plowing and how the more you plowed, the more you had to plow. Interesting thing. Hard life if you're 12 years old and you're behind a mule. We can talk a little bit about plowing and about why, oh, heavens to Betsy, you don't need to be doing that anymore. You hadn't got a mule. You probably couldn't drive a mule if you had one, could you? You don't need to plow either. We'll talk a little bit about that. But we got some callers this morning. Now, we got an interesting problem with longleaf, a longleaf pine. Who's our caller there, Charlie? Sharon, I'm listening. What's up?
Well, we planted that from a little seedling, and it seemed to be doing so well. And then we were out in the yard looking at it yesterday, and it just looks pitiful, like it's dying. Now, a year ago, Hurricane Gordon did blow it over a little bit, and I called you, and you said, do not. At first, I had staked it, and you said, no, take that off. Just let it correct itself, and it did. Yep. But other than that, I don't know what could be wrong with it.
Well, when you planted it as a seedling, and refresh my memory,
I can't hear you. Let me turn on the radio.
Yes, here we go.
Okay, now I can hear you.
When you planted that as a seedling, how big was the seedling? Was it just a? Did it have any stem on it at all?
Yeah, any stem.
Did it have any trunk at all? Could you see a trunk?
Oh, no, no. It was like a bundle that you get from the prison in Atmore.
Good, 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 good. All right. So it was a good seedling. So here's what it probably did some damage to the tree when it blew over. And there was some root damage. It hasn't recovered very well. It's the problem, I can guarantee you, is in the roots. And nowhere else. So why is it having a problem? You know, It's hard to tell. It looks like your backyard is kind of wet. Is it?
Not really.
Okay.
I didn't think so.
Yeah, yeah. It probably when it got blown over, it did some damage to those roots. There is some rot that has set in. It kind of looks like it may be a little bit saturated there at times. And that saturation can make it really hard for the tree to get reestablished. That may have been the reason why it blew over in the first place, is because the ground is a little overly wet.
Okay.
Do you irrigate there? Do you have an irrigation system?
No.
Yeah. So somehow I think the ground is a little bit wet. There's not much you can do. The one thing I can always recommend that almost always helps every plant, may not solve the problem in this case, keep that grass as far away from the trunk as you possibly can.
Now, that I have not done. I have let it, the weeds and the grass grow right up against it, but I can pull that back.
Yeah, yeah. And there are other things that can happen. If the seedling got planted a little deep, it'll catch up with it after a while. Sometimes you'll get girdling of the roots, and you may be able to see that a little better if you pull the grass back. There's not a lot you can do except hope that the longleaf is going to work its way out of this problem, because it'll be smarter about dealing with it than you will be, or than I will be. And I'm not sure it'll work its way out. It looks like it's taking it pretty hard on the chin. But pull that grass back about 2 or 3 feet on all sides,
okay?
And see, and that will give it a little bit of breathing room. And it may also help you see a little bit more about how the root system looks. You should be able to see the roots from the pine emerging right above the soil level.
And if I'm not, should we dig out a little bit?
It might help to move some soil away from those roots, though at this point, yes. Why don't you do this? Remove the grass. Pull the dirt away till you see the roots emerging. Tell me what you see. See if you see any roots that are beginning to wrap around the trunk in a circle. If you see that, call me back next week. And in fact, you're really good at taking pictures. Take a picture mm-hmm. and send it to me next week, and let's look at it again and see if we can't figure out what's going on.
Okay. One more question. I bought longleaf, far as I can see, for a friend's birthday later this month. Is there any day you might, I know the Botanical Center is only open on Fridays now. Are you ever there on Friday to autograph it?
I am not at the Botanical Gardens much anymore at all. And, of course, the Botanical Gardens is only open at certain times. So how are you going to get – I wrote a book called with my wife and with Rhett Johnson called Longleaf Far as the Eye Can See. It's an interesting book. A lot about longleaf pines, a lot about where we grew up and what it looks like in that original forest. How are you going to get me to sign it? I'm not sure.
Well, that's okay.
Let's try to figure that one out sometime. And I will I'll try to send you a message about how we make that work.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, good talk to you. Yeah, that's interesting. You know, longleaf's a pretty tough tree at times. It does really well. It's a great tree for a lot of situations. In areas where the water table is high, like in Midtown Mobile. And where the ground things don't drain very well, and where, you know, just below the surface there might be a good bit of water. In those areas, I don't know that I would recommend planting longleaf. I would recommend slash pine. It probably does a little better in those areas. And if you also, with longleaf, if you plant it too deep, I always say this with any plant, but particularly it's true with longleaf, if you plant those seedlings too deep, you can end up with a lot of problems. You really want to be able to see those the roots, and this is always true. Hey, anybody who's planting trees, shrubs, almost anything else, doesn't count with vegetables. We'll talk about them in a minute. But trees, shrubs, any woody plant, you need to be able to see those roots emerging from the trunk after you plant. If you can't see where the roots emerge from the trunk after you plant, you planted it too deep. And that can create problems later on, and it's something to think about. I'm kind of suspicious that could be the problem here. May have nothing to do with planting. May be just the fact that the wind blew this little rocket stage longleaf down, and it broke some roots, and it hadn't really recovered. But we're going to check on that. Hey, give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Sugar magnolia, blossoms twirl, that's all empty and I don't care.
So my baby down by the river,
who should have to come up soon for care.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. You know, I'm hearing, and Taxman tells me, no rain on the eastern shore. It's crazy, isn't it? It is absolutely crazy. The way the rain has been falling for a while now. And I don't know why, but, you know, it's the drought is going to be a serious thing. And it's something we've got to prepare for. I'm just telling you, it's coming on. It's going to be pretty serious. Normally, this time of year, the temperatures would be cooling off a little bit, which means that the severity of the – we're not getting these daily pop-up showers anymore for a lot of reasons. They just don't happen. It's hurricane summer. Almost every storm we get is related to a tropical system out in the Gulf. And if we get a lot of tropical systems, we're in great shape. If we don't get a lot of tropical systems, it's going to be dry as a bone. And we've got the tropical systems have missed some of us. Some of us got 10 inches, but, you know, most of that drained into the Gulf of Mexico, so it's not like we got a real 10 inches of rain. We probably, you know, maybe got a half inch that soaked in. And what's going to happen now is it's going to get really dry, and that's what the long-range forecasts are showing. We got a serious problem coming up. We're going to have to be prepared for it. You're going to have to be prepared to water. This is the time of year. It's always hard for me to figure out whether it's we lose more plants in April and May during that season or whether we lose more plants during September and early October. I think probably I'd say we lose more plants in August, September, and October than at any other time of year. People give up on watering. They forget to water. They think that plants that were planted this spring are already going to be well-established, and oftentimes they're not. If you planted things in April, they probably aren't well-established at all, so they're going to need a little bit extra water. If you do water, the other problem is with this time of year is you've got to water so that the water goes in deep for established plants. It can be quite a task. It's going to be a difficult time ahead of us. If you're having questions about how you're going to deal with it, you give me a call. Let's talk about it. Hey, Dan's calling. Dan, what's up? Dan, you there? Yeah, what's up?
Hey, so I've got my okra and just problems with ants, it seems like. And since I grow in raised beds, of course, the produce are near one another, so once they hit one plant, it's pretty much all of them. So I'm trying to find an organic or natural way to either A, to get rid of them, and then B, to kind of repel them in the future.
I am so glad you asked me this question, Dan, because it's such a fun question to answer. And I'm going to give you the answer, and you have to take me seriously because I'm quite serious. You know, when you have a an ant problem on your okra, ants, do you have aphids? Are you seeing the little aphids as well?
I've had aphids for a bit, but I don't see them too much now. I know you can't reduce the ants to get rid of them because there was it the mildew or
that's right. So the ants are usually on the okra, not always, but the ants are usually on the okra to milk the aphids. Literally, they treat the aphids like cows, and they milk the aphids for the honeydew that the aphids are sucking. The aphids, these little tiny bugs, are on the okra flowers, on the okra calyx and leaves sometimes, and they're sucking the juices out of that plant, and when they excrete this thing that we politely call honeydew, the ants use that and milk them for that honeydew and take it back to their colony. So and the ants protect those aphids as well. Usually, when ants are on okra, and I'm not saying it always happens this way, but usually when ants are on okra, it's because the aphids are there. And because they're herding aphids and they're trying to build a little colony of aphids. So there may not be many, but they're beginning, you know, they're sort of building their herd, and they'll keep building. It's usually very easy to deal with ants and aphids on okra. And I've been doing it, and it is incredibly easy. And you're going to, when you're out watering, take your hose and spray the aphids off of all of those buds. It doesn't take long. It'll take you 2-3 minutes. Just spray the aphids as best you can off those things. The ants get pretty tired of that, and they will quit trying to herd those aphids. It'll take you 3 or 4 days of spraying, and the ants will just give up. Ants don't like being... ants always count on the fact that people give up before they do. So they'll be a little persistent, but they're not going to, you know, 3 or 4 days of good spray offs and you'll get rid of most of the ants. They are looking for moisture this time of year as well. And particularly with it being so dry. And I think that sometimes they find that moisture, in the flowers of the okra. If all the ants are doing is just getting to the moisture in the flower of the okra, without tending aphids, they're probably not going to hurt the okra that much. And if you want to get rid of the ants before you pick the okra, just spray the tops of the okra, and the ants will go away. How do you? And so you're going to ask me the question: how do you get rid of ants? You never do. You never will. You learn to kind of live with them. You learn to redirect them. But mostly on the okra, it's not going to be a problem. If you can just spray those okra heads, where the tender new growth is coming out, and do that about 3 or 4 days, and the ants will give up trying to herd the, aphids. And, if they're just getting the moisture and the nectar from the flower, it's probably not going to hurt your okra crop at all. What are you seeing, Dan?
So I see that they're going after the okra pods themselves, and almost looks like they're trying to get in there with the okra, the vegetable itself, a little bit. And they started off with the flowers, but it's escalated on a couple plants. I've been spraying them a little bit of what you're saying, but just not with the tenacity that you're wanting me to.
If you could remember to do it every afternoon, it'll really help. And they'll get tired of that. And also spray around the base of the with the water, just sometimes giving a good flush all up and down the stems and right around the base. But mostly they're attracted to the tops. You don't see any aphids at all?
Not that I can tell. I could be mistaken, Bill. Would it make sense to introduce something like ladybugs or something like that to control the acid?
Well, right. If you've got the reason it's probably not a good idea to use poisons on okra is because the ladybugs will come in and take care of the aphids pretty quickly if you can keep the ants under control. And if you don't have aphids, then the ladybugs don't help at all because the ladybugs don't eat ants. Fire ants can do funny things during certain times of year. I acknowledge I have had them eat whole eggplants before. It's kind of unusual. It only happened to me one time in 30 years of gardening. More than that, but one year the ants ate my eggplants. It's the weirdest thing. They've never done it before or since. So I'm not saying that fire ants won't do funky things like eat your okra, but mostly they're probably going for the moisture. Have you seen any damage to the okra pods themselves?
A couple, and I'll send some photos to you to see what I'm talking about as well. But I was just curious about it, and I think I've got a couple different tactics you've given me to try and get rid of them, see how that works.
Yeah. You know, you can't really, I don't know what, anything you could spray on the okra to get rid of the ants is going to make the okra inedible. Mm-hmm. So that kind of defeats the purpose, doesn't it? And so the water really helps. I mean, we've really got a tool that people didn't have. I think about this often. People didn't have water under pressure 100 years ago. We have water under pressure. It's this really neat tool, and we don't use it effectively sometimes. But if you could just spray the tops of those plants down while the ants are on there, it really can be very discouraging. And if they're there to tend the aphids, and oftentimes they are, usually they are, that gets rid of the aphids too. It just blows the aphids off, and aphids don't crawl back up plants very easily, and so the ants have no reason to be there. Give it a shot. Let's see how it works. Call me back next week if you don't see some aphids. You should see some little black moldy stuff where the young aphids are starting, if you can see that in there where the ants are, and see if you see that, Dan.
I will do. Thank you, Bill.
All right, thank you. Yeah, so I got a picture that someone has sent me of a tree. I'm gonna guess it's hard to tell. I can't tell whether it's a live oak or a water oak. Of a limb that has fallen. The limb fell before the rain occurred. That is what often happens. You know, it'd be the middle of a calm day, no wind, no rain, maybe the humidity's a little high, and suddenly the limb just goes, just shears off. And we're seeing this more and more and more. If you look at limbs in the forest, they don't stretch out from a tree 30, 40, 50 feet away from the tree. They stay pretty close to the tree. Even live oaks in natural situations, usually that's the way they grow. Things have changed when we put trees in the yard, and that's why these limbs are shearing off. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Traveling through this world alone, there is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair land to which I go. I'm going home to see my mother. I'm going. I'm just going overboard.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
So here's another way of looking at it. If we had a question about ants and okra, and ants sometimes will, fire ants will just about eat anything if they take a mind to. They rarely, it's rarely a problem every year, but some years, ants will just focus on a particular crop for whatever reason, and they'll just really tear into it. What do you do if you've got ants in your garden? Can you keep ants out of the garden? Nah, probably not. The ants are going to easily make a trail to your garden, even if you keep them out of your garden. If you keep them out of your yard, if you figure out a way to do that, you're not going to keep them out of your neighbor's yard. And if you keep them out of yours and your neighbor's yard, well, they'll come in from the next neighbor's yard because they move around very quickly. They build colonies very quickly. It's nothing for them to move a couple of hundred feet. And so they're going to do that, and they're going to be, it's going to be a problem. So what do you do about ants when they're attacking some of your plants? And occasionally that happens. They will attack, as I said, they attacked my eggplants directly one time. And that was a bit of a problem. They were eating them pretty badly. And I've had a little bit of problem with just okra too, with the ants just coming up and eating, coming to the okra blossoms. Usually they didn't eat the fruit, but I wouldn't put it past them. Okay? Wouldn't put it past them for that to happen. What do you do? One of the spraying them with a hose can be very effective. They just don't like that, and you can spray them off, and that helps. The other thing, and I will tell you, and it's a little more trouble, is to put Tanglefoot or some other type of sticky trap around the base of your plant, around the base of your okra, so that the ants, when they come there, they get in that sticky trap, right? And they can't move up the stem. And there's a lot of ways of doing that. Probably the best way to do it is to take the, if you've got a sticky trap or Tanglefoot, to bury part of it, to wrap it around the stem, bury part of it under the ground so that when they try to move up, you see what I'm saying? You see how that works? So that's a little more trouble, but that can be very effective against ants. They're not going to move up the stem in a case like that. Hey, Titus, I'm listening. What's up?
My mom has a peach tree, and it's peach.
Okay, let's try this one more time because you're on the speakerphone. Can you just can you use the phone regular like?
My mom has a peach tree, and it keeps being eaten by bees. How can I deal with this?
It keeps being eaten by bees?
Yeah.
Tell me what you mean. How are the bees eating it?
They're making little black spots and marks.
Black spots and marks. Well, here's my thought. I don't think bees are doing it. Tell me what you mean. Why do you think the bees are making the black? Are the black spots on the fruit or are they on the leaves? Fruit. Okay. Well, I don't think the bees are doing that. I think there are probably other things that are making the holes. Bees may come to the sweet juice that oozes out of those holes, but I don't think they're actually making the holes themselves.
Okay.
There are a lot of different bugs that will attack the fruit. Lots of borers that attack the stems, lots of other creatures, and lots of fungal attacks that will attack the fruit. The bees are coming later. Peaches are a problem. I'll just tell you, they're a big problem. You know, commercial growers who grow peaches in the South spray those trees constantly, and I don't recommend that the average homeowner does that because it's really hard to do well, and the sprays themselves are pretty toxic. So if I were to tell you to do that, I would be endangering you. It's also awful late in the year. Do you still have peaches on the tree?
No.
No? Okay. I can't hear. Anybody still in line, Charlie? Anybody there? All right. Well, let's try another. Let's try that again. I can't hear the caller and can't talk to the caller, but we'll figure that one out. Peach trees, interesting problem. Fruit on peach trees. How do you protect that fruit? Peach trees are not one of the trees that I recommend the average person grows. I've grown peach trees before. I've managed to harvest peaches. It's not always easy because there are so many things that threaten peaches. Bees are not one of them. Bees are kind of a, you know, if bees are coming for maybe some of the sweet juice that's pouring from a hole made by another insect, but bees are not usually a problem. And even yellow jackets are not a problem on peaches, other than the fact that you may tangle with them and they may sting you occasionally, but usually they're not going to pay attention to you when they're on the tree. Well, any other callers out there, Charlie? Yeah, okay. So there it is. Let's talk about a little bit about limbs right now. It's a good thing to do because somebody has sent me a picture of a limb of a, I can't quite tell whether it's a live oak or a water oak. It's a little far off. It looks like it may be a live oak, but I'm not sure because I can't see the leaves up close. But one thing I can tell about that limb is that limb got too big for its britches. And we talk about it a lot, and I think the person who sent me the picture knows this too. But it's a very good warning. When it isn't natural, and we try to tell people this all the time, not just me, but other foresters and other arborists who work for the city and who do commercial work, people like Chris Francis, who we often hear from on our show, and certainly the city arborist, when those limbs get so much weight out on the tips of the branches, it pulls the branch off the tree. Trees in forests don't grow the way they do in cities because the trees in the forest are closer together, right? And so the limbs don't get those big, long, stretchy side limbs. We got to take a break. We're going to be back. You got questions about your tree? You got questions about your garden? Feel free to give us a call. We'll be back as soon as the news is done. Levee's gonna break. If it keeps on